Nachyomi for the Orthodox Union. Sefer Tehillim, the Book of Psalms, Perek Tzadi Tes, Chapter 99, Rabbi Binny Marilis. The last of the section that we would call the 5-4 Kabbalah Shabbos is Mizmor 99, Tzadi Tes. And just as 98 evoked images of 96, so 99 evokes images of 97, in the immediate beginning of Hashem Malach. So that's the same way that 97 begins. It's also happened to be the same way that 93 begins. And would be worthy of a larger discussion, the three of them, in terms of the sense of Hashem Malach, that Hashem reigns. And what we're going to do is, we've done in the last number of chapters, is sort of establish structure, look for some key terminology, so that allows us to focus our energies in understanding the chapter and understanding the Mizmor for all of its meanings and potential meanings in a variety of ways. So I'd like to suggest possibly the most obvious way of delineating the borders and the boundaries here is, as we've done in the past, with finding commonality in common words. So in our text, we have the language of Kadosh three times. And it's very possible to break up the chapter based on those three, so that you would have the end of verse 3, where it says Kadosh Hu, so you could have a break there. At the end of verse 5, where it says again Kadosh Hu, you would have a break there. And then the last set of psukim, the last four, would be the last grouping. So you have a set of three, a set of two, and then a set of four. It's not as neat, perhaps, as a 3-3-3, although perhaps that maybe is a possibility here, although quite difficult. But that's one way to do it. Another possible way to do it is to break it into essentially two groupings of Aleph through Dalet, 1-4, leaving 5 on its own as some form of a refrain, and the reason we'll see is why that is in a moment, and then having 6, 7, 8 serve as a second stanza, quote unquote, and then 9 as a sort of the refrain again with a slight variation. And the reason I say that is because the language of 5 and 9 are very similar. You have the hishtachva'a, the bowing. You have the romimu Hashem Elokeinu part, right? Obviously, exalting and Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem our God. And you also have the Kadosh. So it's very possible that you split off those two sections with this refrain in the middle. Let's begin. Now, coming to this sort of conclusion in these sets of chapters, you get to the point where now, we're exalted, we've sung the song, and now we want to go next. So what happens after you sing the song? You have to make that declaration, the statement of God on high, that God is the reigning power and God is the God. So let's go through it, and we'll pick up some of the key points as best as we can and understand how this can work out. Adonai Melech Yirgizu Amim. Right, God reigns. Same as we've said two other times about God reigning. The notion of it being in the past, but at the same time always having been. Either way, Yirgizu Amim. Yirgizu Amim means that let the people tremble, the nations shall tremble. Tremble probably doesn't cover the full extent of that meaning. When we learn in other sections, Rigzu V'al Techato, that a person should tremble and not do Averis, it's not simply just a person shaking in their boots, but it's sort of the fuller sense of the entire being, inside and out, trembling at what they are experiencing and what they are hearing. So here you have Hashem Malach Yirgizu Amim, because Hashem reigns, so the nations tremble. Yoshev Kruvim Tanu Ta'aretz. So the one that sits upon the Kruvim, upon the Cherubim, Tanu Ta'aretz. Tanut is a word that is not often found. It's not found essentially anywhere else other than other place in Tanakh. If you want to run it as the parallel to Yirgizu, perhaps you could, although it would not necessarily form the same meaning. Hirsch has an interesting way of explaining the term. He says that it's an enlarged version of, I cannot find it at the moment, But basically what the word tanut means, nut, tzura chazaka yotir shel nod, zazua tamuta. It is a stronger version of movement, of trembling. Okay, that could be. It also could mean sense that the sort of a destruction of the land, or the implosion of the land, where you have nations trembling. So now the land, so what's the land going to do? Land trembles, the land, it could be a trembling, could be an earthquake of sorts, in a certain variety of sense. What does the Yoshev Kervuvim mean? That's a very strange, very sort of strange terminology that's brought up here, which is an interesting sort of vision. Hashem sits above the Kruvim. It's the image of the Aron HaBris, the Kruvim there, the Makom HaTorah, the seat of all holiness, is the Aron HaBris, the Ark, or the Ark of the Covenant, and that the Torah and Rav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shechina rests between the Kruvim. That's that image. What that evokes here, what that means here, would be an interesting discussion as well. How does that image really work? Perhaps it's an expansive sense that he who sits amongst the Kruvim sort of becomes this incredible power. He that is the God, as the next verse brings out, Hashem B'tzion Gadol, God who is great in Zion, V'ramhu al kol ha'amim, and is also above and beyond all of the other nations. And those are possibilities, a sort of an expansion. An expansion of the text from one to the next. Sorry about that little pause there. And what you have then is you have Yoshev Kruvim Tenut Haaretz, and then Hashem B'tzion Gadol, Hashem is great in Zion, and then he's all the more so great amongst the other, above the other nations as well. That's part of a sequence and progression from one to the next. That if he's great in Zion, it doesn't necessitate that he is above the other nations, but rather one can say, as we've said before, that one might think the opposite, that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is great amongst the Jewish people, that doesn't mean anything. And so it says, no, not only is God great in the Jewish people, but also, more the more so, is he the case above all the other nations as well. And therefore, Yodu Shimcha Gadol V'Nora, Kadosh Hu, let them praise, Yodu Shimcha, let them praise the name of Hashem as great and awesome. Kadosh Hu, that it's holy. Hashem is holy, right? If you want to say that it's Kadosh, and we have three Kadoshes, it's Kadosh, 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 that's a good possibility. Then the fullest and the most great explanation or exclamation of the sense of the grandness and greatness of God is in the statement of Kadosh. Hashem is Kadosh. He's moved out. He's separate, but he's connected. He's holy. He's all-encompassing of sanctity and spirituality in the universe. And one could easily cut the text right there and say that that's one set. And that's a good possibility. And then what you would have now, our next set would be 4 and 5. Now what you have in 4 and 5, verses 4 and 5, V'oz melech mishpatahev, right? And the strength of the king who loves justice, right? Ata konanta misharim, you have established equity. Mishpat utzdaka b'Yaakov atasisa. You execute judgment and righteousness in Yaakov. Let's finish out the next section, perhaps. Romamu Adonai Eloheinu. Exalt Hashem our God. Vishtachavu lahadom raglav. And worship at his footstool. Hadom would be his footstool. Raglav, his feet. Right? Kadosh Hu. Again, Kadosh Hu. Holy is he. And what you have here is a very sort of interesting understanding. What is that? What does that mean? What is konanta misharim? What is the strength of God in the sense that he loves justice? And what is it, the justice that and righteousness that you've done for Yaakov? That's a very odd text that leads into this great thing about Romamu that you have to exalt. This is perhaps what you can explain based on the following Medrash. Medrash says in Medrash Shochar Tov that as follows, Amar Rabbi Alexandroi, Ata konanta yashrus bolamecha. You have established straightness in their world. Yeshlo adam din im chaveiro. A person has a judgment with his friend. Who nichnasim aladin, and he goes to Beis Din. Vehein mekablin aleim masha adin yotze, and they accept upon themselves what the judgment has been. Vaosin shalom, and they make peace. Havei omer ata konanta meisharim. That's what it says. Ata konanta meisharim. You've established equity. You've established evenness. You've established a sense where people can accept the judgment. They can be peaceful in the judgment as it exists. And that is an enormous power. That is an enormous strength, an enormous, an overwhelming experience to watch. You've established that in the Jewish people. You love justice and you love righteousness. That's what's going to bring people to exalting. How? So it's very possible that what you have is the following thing. What is it that's going to bring people to acknowledge and exalt God in the world? And how is it that that's our power, that's our message, or that's our mission in the world, is to create situations and scenarios and experiences where the world looks at it and says, "Ah, oh, I want to be part of that group. I want to exalt and praise their God. Let me talk about their God." Perhaps it's in an ethical, moral society. The manner in which we behave and the righteousness and justice and equity with which we act and hold ourselves, perhaps that is the manner in which we best show the image and message of God on earth. And when we violate that, then we violate that possibility, and then there's no possible way of romimu. It can't be. There's no sense that there's going to be a hishtachva'a, a bowing or an acknowledgement of the grandness and the greatness of God, if we are in violation of that crucial tenet of the world. So perhaps what happens then is that you have this idea of God reigning in the world, and you have the people coming out, right? Who's going to do Yodu Shimcha? Who's the Yodu? Who's going to sing the praise? That's the other nations of the world. They're going to say Kadoshu. Why and how and when? By virtue of experiencing us in our greatest way. And by doing that, they can then bow at his footstool and proclaim again the sense of Kadosh. And now, bringing it back to us, in this third stanza, perhaps, is the sense of a remembering, right? Recollections, viewing in the past. We've seen this before, where you have the Mishorer, the author, talking about what's going to be and how it's going to happen, and you're bringing an example from a different time. And here, Moshe v'Aharon b'Kohanav u'Shmuel b'Kerei Shemo. Here, and now it's a Kriya, right? When Moshe and Aaron were standing as the priests, and Shmuel, right, called down the name of Hashem. Interestingly enough, they're all from the same family. They're all from Shevet Levi, right? Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel, they were the greats. They were the leaders. They were the ones who called out, Karim El Adonai, who your name? They called out to Hashem. They were amongst the ones who called out to Hashem. They called out to Hashem. And he answered them. He spoke to them in pillars of clouds. They kept his testimonies and the statute that he gave them. They kept everything. They kept the Torah. That's probably an image of Moshe and Aaron, more Moshe perhaps even directly. Perhaps one understands it as Aaron in the Mishkan and Shmuel also in the Mishkan. Right? When he spoke to Hashem, where was he? Hashem Adonai Eloheinu Ata Anisam. Now we're speaking directly to Hashem. Hashem, you answered them. El Noseya Yisalehem. You are a forgiving God to them. Vinokem Alalilosam. Right? Even though you took action against their misdeeds, we're okay with that. That's okay. That's part of the process. Scharva Onesh. That shows that you care. That shows that you're connected to us. Well, it's difficult to understand how that would be part of the whole process of exalting. But it's part of the strictness and the righteousness and the justness of the system. And therefore, again, not just out on the footstools, but rather close at the Har Kodesh, because now it's Hashem Eloheinu, right? Not just simply that you over there have to bow down to our God, but we ourselves, we have to bow down to our God because our God is holy. Not just Kadosh Hu, Ki Kadosh Hashem Elef Hashem, our God is holy. That's really one way of structuring it. Perhaps the other way of establishing it is taking the first four, having this refrain in the middle, and then this next four, and then having a refrain at the end. So you have four, one, three, and then one. And what that perhaps does is simply just sort of changes it in a slightly different way. Now I saw this, again, as I've been mentioning numerous times, I can't mention him enough, is the Rabbi Yechalom, and then he brings this as a possibility of understanding. So you have the reign of Hashem. In the first four verses, it's about God, and it's about Gadol, right? The refrain, the regularity of the word Gadol and Ram and Norah, this awesome, unbelievable, grand, great power. And then because of that, you have to bow to God. How could you not? But you have to bow. But you're bowing at a distance. You're bowing at the Hadom Raglav. And then again, but you have the sense of understanding the responsiveness of God. Now, not just Hashem reigns above us, but Hashem responds. Hashem is active. Even we're Koray, we're He's Oneh. We call out, and He answers, and He's connected, and we have an intimate, direct, and personal relationship. Bi'amud Anan, Hashem spoke to us from within His clouds, from within His domain, and we entered. Moshe Rabbeinu entered, and we were there, and He listens, and He responds, and He wants our input, and He wants our impact, and He always responds to them. And then again, of course, again, a sense that it's a bowing here, right? A calling out to bow to our God, not just to God, but to our God, Hashem Elokeinu. And that's where Kabbalah Shabbos ends, at least prior to Lichadodi, which is a completely different conversation. But here what you have now is the whole sense of Kabbalah Shabbos is this idea of working our way towards the new song and understanding that there's a song and understanding that there's a sense of a relationship, a connection to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, a greatness and a grandness to God, and our opportunity to interplay and interact with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the goal to bring the other nations along the way, to bring them into the conversation, to have them part of the story and part of the song, part of the exalting, part of the praying, part of the joy, part of the simcha. It's not just ours, but it's ours to share right to the rest of the world. In the sense, that's the message of a Shabbos, the sense of a resting, or the sense of a recouping energy, the sense of ceasing, of stopping to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu and appreciate that greatness in the world, is sort of a similar idea. And our goal is to share that and to spread that with the other nations. We'll continue tomorrow with chapter 100, Perek Kuf.